Hi, I'm Mark Brody, and this is the Friday Newscap Podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
His impact was profound, and, you know, his life was cut short. I think it's important for him and his, you know, his supporters, that his legacy continues.
We can argue, we can fight, we can have different ideas. I love that we have left and we have, you know, the ones that are not so progressive. I love it. But we have to come together when it's important for the people of Arizona.
The speech restriction they had in the EPM went too far and gave too much discretion to government officials to criminalize and punish speech that they viewed as offensive or harassing.
The old way of doing things isn't working. There are too many burdensome government regulations, outdated processes, and unnecessary paperwork that stands in the way of common sense solutions. This red tape kills jobs.
Are they supposed to violate the law so that they can find out whether it's enforceable or not? Or are they just supposed to comply with the law that they believe is unconstitutional? They're kind of stuck in a Hobson's choice, aren't they?
And joining me to talk about the decision to not launch an ethics investigation against a GOP state lawmaker, state Democrats electing a new party chair, and more are Marcus Dellartino of First Strategic. Good morning, Marcus.
Good morning.
And Sam Richard of Consilium Consulting. Sam, good morning to you.
Great to be here.
So, Sam, let me start with you. State Democrats elected their second new party chair of 2025, Charlene Fernandez, former state lawmaker, former House Minority Leader. Good choice going into 2026?
Oh, absolutely fantastic choice. I am over the moon about Charlene's ability to bring people together. And I think that's what the party needs in this moment, not just the party itself, but also, you know, what we're looking at going into an even number year in a very, very important election cycle. I think that she has the trust and the history and the relationship with our statewide officials and can command a room and is going to take the party in the right direction.
How big of a challenge will it be for her to bring the party back together, both because it's been seemingly, at least from the outside, so fractured over the last, let's say, 6 to 7 months, but also because, as you pointed out, there's an election coming up not that long from now.
I think that always, you know, our job, I guess, is to predict a little bit. So you don't really know what's ahead and what new crises she's going to be confronting as party chair. But I think that she does have a demonstrable track record of bringing people together. She led the Democratic caucus in the House, and she has worked across the aisle on a number of issues and really can command respect inside a room and around a table. So I'm extremely hopeful about her ability to lead our party to success in 26.
So, Marcus, at the risk of asking you to wade into internal Democratic Party politics here, you know Charlene Fernandez from having spent time at the state legislature with her. I'm curious about your thoughts at taking somebody as a former legislator and putting them in this role.
She's got her work cut out for her. Listen, Democratic voter registration's tanking, and Republicans are picking it is blocking and tackling of campaigns. It is one of the most basic things that you can accomplish as party chair. And it's a huge task for the Democrats to get on task. If, you know, and operating, just to be clear, operating within a caucus down at the state legislature is vastly different than being a party chair. And so, yes, she's going to have to build a coalition. And I would argue the Democratic Party has to change some messaging and pivot a little bit. If she is the Yuma legislator that she began her career being and taking sort of that type of messaging into the campaign and voter registration, then I think she's going to make some movement. If she is in her latter years more progressive of the candidate, more progressive of the messaging, I think that doesn't bode well in Arizona, and I think it'll cause a problem in registration.
Interestingly, she came in this week for a conversation, and she repeatedly brought up rural Arizona, talking about, you know, getting folks in Yuma, getting folks in rural parts of the state sort of on board with the messaging, and talked about, you know, needing to talk about issues like the Affordable Care Act, like Social Security, things like that. Marcus, do you think is that the approach you're talking about in terms of what could be effective?
I think that you have to hunt the ducks where the ducks are. And you know, look, 10% of Arizona is rural. The ducks are in Pima County and the ducks are in Maricopa County. And sort of that is where your vast movement needs to happen. I certainly understand the attractiveness of the messaging going into rural Arizona. Look, here's the net effect of cuts to Medicaid, and here's why you want to be part of the Democratic Party. But the fact of the matter is the votes just don't exist there. You've got to start messaging in Maricopa and Pima counties.
But when you're hunting birds in Yuma County, they're doves. So I think perhaps Charlene will bring a softer message. And I think that's really why you're starting this messaging and kind of seeing this focus on greater Arizona. Because even though the votes are in Maricopa County and Pima County, I think when you spend enough time in Arizona, you know how important the other 13 counties are to the success of the state as a whole. And, you know, to your point, too, about kind of Marcus, about the progressive or more moderate, I think if you're looking at our top three statewide offices and Senator Kelly, Senator Gallego, and Governor Hobbs, they have all done a really, you know, textbook job of carrying Democratic values and progressive values into a space that can be translated to a more moderate audience. And I think that Charlene's going to take a page from that book.
Do you agree? So it sounds like you're saying she should take this sort of statewide approach as opposed to just focusing on Pima and Maricopa?
Absolutely. But I think that what we're saying is that, or what I'm saying is that it's very much a collaborative effort, that you can't just go. Phoenix will only go as far as Yuma County or, you know, the town of Safford or the overall health of the state. Our 22 sovereign tribal nations, right? All of that is going to be important. And Phoenix cannot leapfrog the success of Arizona as a whole.
Marcus, we heard this week from State Senate President Warren Peterson that he would like to rename part of a freeway after Charlie Kirk. Of course, a lot of Charlie Kirk activity in the valley over the last several days. There's the vigil at ASU, of course, the big memorial service on Sunday at State Farm Stadium in Glendale. Would you expect that, like, his is a name that we're going to continue to be hearing specifically in Arizona for at least the short term here?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Arizona's in a unique position compared to the rest of the nation in that Turning Point is headquartered here. Charlie Kirk lived here. Charlie Kirk had children here. His family's here. And so we have a different sort of perspective on this situation than I think the rest of the country. I talked to friends in other states who were frankly unaware who Charlie was. And I'm not surprised. He's just a little bit more familiar to Arizonans. And so I think this conversation will continue. Certainly for a little bit, and the legislature is going to continue to drive the message, and the Turning Point is going to continue to drive the message.
How, Sam, do you expect Democrats to respond to these kinds of things? Because as we've seen, it's kind of a sensitive moment right now. So, like, do you anticipate, for example, lots of Democrats coming out against renaming part of the 202 after Charlie Kirk?
I think there will absolutely be a contingency of folks that come out against something like that. But I also think, you know, to Marcus's point, we're in this really this important moment right now where we as a community here in Arizona need to process all of these feelings. And I think introducing ideas such as renaming a freeway are something that we do for key leaders, right? We have the John S. McCain Terminal at Phoenix Sky Harbor Airport. We have Piestewah Peak, right? We name stretches of roads and important, you know, physical monuments for people who are, you know, luminaries in our society. I think what we're doing right now is we're kind of going through the machinations to see if Charlie, is worthy of some type of recognition in that way. And I think that's absolutely a worthy conversation to have.
Well, so Marcus, Sam brought up Piestewah Peak, and I was interested in that because that was sort of the example of the way that naming is supposed to happen in the state. It's does not always the way that happens.
No, that one did not go very well. If my memory serves me correctly,
it did not follow the prescribed amount of time for somebody to have passed. And if my memory serves, didn't really go through that board of geographic and historical names in the way that it was supposed to.
It was a hardline push by the governor's office. And also, interestingly enough, it was about the time cell phones came online. And so there was a brand of technology that was evolving that politics of late did not fit into very well. So things were recorded, things were said. And it didn't go very well. And I would just say that, you know, I and maybe this is way too conservative of me, but I'm over the naming of stuff. I feel like every time we name something, there's some controversy that gets associated with it, whether it was Piwestowa Peak or there was a mountain out west for Charlie Keating, the fourth. That turned into a debacle down at the legislature. There's just a long list of these things, and you know, at some point, I don't know whether we're helping or not helping. Let's just build the building, for God's sakes.
I think the bottom line here is we're at a moment where we need to come together as a community and figure out how we are going to remember Charlie and his, you know, impact on Arizona and the country. And I think that that is a conversation that will not be over after Sunday afternoon.
Marcus, let me start with you with the Scottsdale City Council. This is an extremely convoluted story, so I'm going to do my best here. A bunch of residents in Scottsdale want the city to sue the state over a law that the state passed that blocked an election that Scottsdale residents wanted to have over whether or not they could block a development by Axon, the company that makes tasers. And the city says it's going to file a notice of claim, which is a precursor to a lawsuit, but doesn't necessarily mean a lawsuit. This seems like this is one of those issues that, at least in Scottsdale, is not going away.
No. But, you know, to put it – and by the way, very good job. And
thank you. I appreciate that.
Clearing that
up. Kudos.
You know, and it got convoluted because the city council basically – signaled that they want to sue, then went into exec session, came out with a different answer, went back into exec session. I mean, it was just a mess. I would just caution everybody that Axon is not a one-off. This is happening throughout the state of Arizona, certainly throughout the valley. And residents in communities are leery of more apartment complexes, more duplexes, more triplexes, whatever it is. And they want single family houses wherever they live. And that is causing a problem with affordable housing. And so I think that Axon's just the highlight sort of that particular issue. And certainly, you know, North Scottsdale kind of gets that attention. But really, at the end of the day, this isn't about Axon moving its headquarters. This is about Axon being able to build apartments.
Yeah, this really does seem to be about the apartment. I mean, you talk to people who oppose the development, and they say we're good with the headquarters, we're good with the hotel, we're good with everything else. We don't want the apartments. But interestingly, like the project was approved by the former city council, and then they were mostly voted out of office in favor of people who had new council members who'd come in and, according to the people who voted for them, not approve this kind of thing.
Yeah, and I think that action that the council took does keep some options open to keep the dialogue moving in a direction. So we'll see where that goes. But I think an important point here for me is that the consternation really is focused on the housing piece of the development. But because it is connected to a headquarters relocation, you have a lot of anxiety, a lot of existential worry in kind of the economic development community writ large, and all of these, Fortune 500, Fortune 50 companies that are seriously looking at Arizona as a place to come and doesn't necessarily want to commit to billions of dollars of investment when this type of trouble is going to be staring them in the face.
Well, Marcus, in fact, when this issue is going through the state legislature, a couple, I think Texas and Florida each like tweeted at Axon, said, hey, Arizona doesn't want you. Welcome here.
Yeah. And it's, again, as I said, it's happening in almost every local jurisdiction I know, whether it's housing for veterans, forget low-income housing, just talk about housing for veterans, and people don't want it in their community. So, here's the problem, folks. People keep moving here. And if you moved here from California and say, I don't, you know, classic NIMBY, right? Not in my backyard. I want to shut the door now that I'm here. It doesn't work. And we're probably going to get into a different subject matter here, which will show the amount of growth that's going on in Arizona and the amount of infrastructure that we need to keep up with that growth. So we're going to have to find out a solution to this. And frankly, it's going to require some flexibility on behalf of the constituents in the state of Arizona.
Marcus, let me stay with you with the speaking of the state legislature, the House Ethics Committee decided this week, the chairman said he would not have an investigation into Representative John Gillette. He's a Mojave County Republican. He made some anti-Muslim comments. Democrats have filed an ethics complaint. He said free speech, basically, right? We're not going to look into this.
Right. And I will say – I said this earlier, you can take the soldier out of the army, but you can't take the army out of the soldier. And just for perspective and context here, John Gillette spent 35 years in the United States Army, has been overseas a number of times. And so I think his perspective is probably a little bit different than a lot of people. Certainly has a, probably coming from Mojave County, the most conservative district in the state. Probably has some constituents that might share his feelings, but not reflective of the state. I'd also add, you know, he's not going to run for re-election, so I'm not too sure what the punishment really would have been here that gets you anywhere.
Sam, one of the other things he said more recently was in reference to Democrats, unity is no longer an option. Seems like it's going to be a fun legislative session next year.
Yeah, and I do think that has some very troubling undertones generally. And I'm just, you know, would be more interested in this conversation if Representative Gillette's YouTube show was licensed by the FCC, just to see what Chairman Carr would do in response to some of his comments. But yeah, I think the comments objectively were something that should be rejected by where we're at currently in our political discourse. I think there is no place in political discourse for what Representative Gillette said. However, I think that the work of and the machinations of the legislature don't really allow for any serious action to be taking place in terms of an ethics investigation.
Do you anticipate, not specifically necessarily these comments, but just sort of the reaction that both Republicans and Democrats have had, and maybe more to the point, the perception of how the other side has reacted, especially, I guess, to Charlie Kirk's assassination. Do you expect that to have an impact next year at the Capitol?
Oh, without question. And I think that, you know, it feels like session is right on top of us. But we still do have, 90 to 120 days until we really
January.
Get into the mix of it. But I do think that is a moment where we're at, and we're looking to our leaders, both, you know, political and otherwise, to really maybe help us make the transition from us versus them to just us. And I think that the more and more we can do that, I think that we'll be in a better place when it comes to January. And I'm hopeful that we can shift the tone very soon.
Marcus, at the risk of asking a cynical political question, is that possible?
I am not hopeful. And I, you know, listen, I'm great at cynical questions.
That's why I went to you with this one.
But I just, you know, I am looking at next session, you know, just looking at the budget numbers alone, there's going to be a brutal fight. And so I think that with that tension, and then in addition to what we're just going through these last couple of weeks with Charlie, I'm hopeful, I guess would be the best way I can put it, that they can come together. I am not I'm not kidding myself, though.
Do you think that there's some amount of, I don't know if trust is the right word, but I'm not quite sure what the right word is, but has something been lost between Democrats and Republicans over the last week and a half in terms of how each side sees the other based on the reactions, or as I said before, the perceived reactions to what happened in Utah?
I think for some of them, certainly, you know, and the response that Representative Gillette was making was in response to Sarah Longori, who's, you know, quite a lovely person, frankly. I mean, sweet as the day is long. And so I think, you know, somebody like her is hopeful and can sort of bridge some gaps. And I think that there's certainly some members on the Republican side that they can bridge. You know, the question is, what is that bridge, right? Is it just going out and having a meal together or a cup of coffee? Or is it, you know, hey, we're going to work on, you know, banning guns, which is not going to happen. So, yeah. You know, put it in context of what we're actually asking for.
And given the fact that next year is an election year, I mean, the conventional wisdom is it's sort of twofold, that one, the sessions tend to be a little shorter, right, because people want to get out and campaign and raise money. But also, as Marcus said, it's going to be kind of a tough budget year. You know, the parties are not really seeing eye to eye right now. Like, it seems like it's kind of an interesting and potentially volatile mix for next year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, to maybe recharacterize what I was saying when I was hopeful is I really want to be hopeful. And I'm hopeful in the leaders that really are at the forefront of and really own the responsibility of setting the tone, whether that be the president or, you know, the president of the Senate or the Speaker of the House or the governor here in Arizona. They have a responsibility to really kind of reset the battleground as it sits. And we are simmering in the political space right now. And I think that if, you know, there's anything that I'm hopeful for, it's that we can just all take a collective breath and realize that we all signed up for this work because we want a better place to live, work, and play. And we might come to that arena with a couple of different ideas about how to do that, but we're all there for the same overarching purpose, which is to make Arizona the best place to live, work, and play.
All right, we'll have to leave it there. Sam Richard, Marcus Dellartino, thanks to you both. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's biggest stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. I'm Mark Brody. Thanks for listening.